Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Man.
I don't like the hood. What you say, Fred?
I said we better
take it on the lamb out here.
Yeah. We better watch the man.
But
come over here, brother, let me tell you something. You think we're talking too loud?
Hush that butt.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch them. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What'd you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, look at him. We can have it. Alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jason?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean, huh?
And on the sea.
Excuse me, cat, while I rap. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Nah, see, that ain't the way it works, yo. It ain't. Because, like, I'm the one out here all day taking a chance, right? I'm saying, police roll up into this bitch, and ain't going to be you to catch no charge. Police-wise, the thing you need to do is lay all that good shit down on an even split, yo. Come Friday, me and my niggas done sold all that shit off, come pass and get paid. That's where I'm at with it.
Hey, Frog. Come here. No, serious. Come here. First of all, and I don't know how to tell you this without hurting you deeply. First of all, you happen to be white. I'm talking raised on Rapola Street white, or your mama used to drag you down to St. Casimir's just like all the other little piss pants on the block. Second, I'm also white. Not hang on the corner, don't give a fuck white, but Locust Point, IBS, Local 47 white. I don't work without no fucking contract. And I don't stand around listening to horseshit excuses like my cousin Ziggy, who, by the way, is still owed money by you and all your down streetwise wiggers. You go in your pocket, come up with $500 in advance and the $210 that you owe to Zig. You can work my package.
I'm saying, this is the shit you had out here last week. The dimes and Moochie was slinging. Shit was good. We just sold out quick. Alright. I'm gonna send my man around with the dollars. Keep it real, y'all.
Whatever. Yo.
Back during slavery, when black people like me talked to the slaves, they didn't kill them. They'd send some old house Negro along behind him to undo what he said. And the house Negro always looked out for his master, his master.
You're a simple, weak motherfucker, but that's besides the point.
Well, let me tell you something. I am a Greek, and I don't play that. I don't play that.
You got your head stuck so far up your ass with your Harvard education, your bullshit, pretentious, puffy ways. Brother man, I'm blacker than you. I'm keeping it real. I'm bad at battle. I got the rule. You're just running trying to be white.
I'm an orange.
Yeah.
A sellout.
Yeah.
Sellout.
Yeah.
Busy as you colored college boys with your fraternity thin white shoes.
Oh, what?
I see you all the time with your books tucked under your arm, going to your classes. They teaching you how to be a man. And run this world, boy? No. Just how to read books and talk like me.
tell us the history of the Boule, who the Boule are, the origins, and the relationship to the ruling class.
This secret society, this particular black secret society today, is the first of the black Greek societies, Sigma Pi Phi. For most of our people, a masonry is a form of secret society. There are other well-known secret societies like Skull and Bones at Yale, and it is that society that the black society modeled itself after. Boule, B-O-U-L-E, the Greek version. There's a French version that's a coming together, a conclave. But the Greek word is what we're looking for, the advisors to the king. The lower house of the Greek parliament is called Boule. And in its history book, and this is a, their logo is a Grecian sphinx. It's an animal. And this Grecian sphinx is similar to a griffin or a gargoyle. And this logo, this symbol, is a guardian animal. They tend to protect something higher than itself.
How is the Boule different than the numerous fraternities and groups in our community? What is the relationship to the Boule class?
Nine make up the axis of the Black Greek dynasty. There are four male societies, four female societies, and the Boule make the ninth one. Those societies tend to make up a aristocracy. We talk in the park about the 10%. Not in the sense of us in exclusivity, but them in the terms of deputizing 10% of the population to assure that the 90% never catch on.
All right, Uncle Tom, Aunt Jemima, Oreo, Boom. You've heard all of these names before, I'm sure of it. Especially if you're black. But the word that you hear floating around the most would have to be Uncle Tom.
What about the big niggas, the house niggas? To get paid quick, they gotta suck a fat dick. To cut out all that bullshit, yo. Guess I'll be a nigga for life.
We know now that the Boule, which is a black elite society, started by the Skull and Bones at Yale, and a black elite society, the Boule, which is the people who basically are chosen by the United States government to run the black neighborhood, whether it be Afrocentric consciousness, whether it be civil rights all-stars, whether it be Bible Belt gospel or whatever, they have infiltrated all forms of society. The Boule. Sigma Pi Phi fraternity. And basically, Tom is found the black community and make sure that we are always at a deficit when it comes to getting ahead. We are marginalized when it comes to rising to our own aspect because we always have this infiltration and this agent community that is not someone that's infiltrated amongst the grassroots, but the very heads of policymakers.
So when you say the Boule is like the black elite?
Yes.
The black elites that try to prevent black people from prospering.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And if whenever we do get some crumbs, it is always guided and controlled by the Europeans, and they make sure that we don't govern our own selves. You see, even when we think we're making a decision, the Boule and the government is behind that, because the first rule in the occult technology of power, which is the Blue and Outer Handbook, is always be a part of all groups, fund everything. We fund the radical and the conservative. So even the most radical, a lot of times, have infiltration and can be backed by the same ruling powers because they really don't care because they're a secret society. So they even fund the radical. This is a form of mind control.
Let's define Uncle Tom, what it means in a dictionary. Uncle Tom, a black man considered by other blacks to be subservient to whites. Now, if you don't know what the word subservient means, it means excessively submissive.
Every day the same shit.
Damn.
Profanity.
Now,
Well, let me tell you something. I am a Greek, and I don't play that. You talk more shit than a little bit. Back to Mother Africa. That's bullshit. Without question, we are all black Americans. So you can watch to see your monkey ass back in Africa if you want to.
Boy, you need to check that alarm clock and wake up.
And controversial book entitled Stupid Black Men, How to Play the Race Card and Lose. Larry is here.
You said it, Wolf.
Yeah.
You said it.
I said what?
You said Stupid Black Men. Thank you for...
Stupid Black Men is the title of this book, and that's a controversial title, How to Play the Race Card and Lose. You got to explain how you came up with this title, because the title alone is generating a lot of commotion out there.
Which proves my point. My point behind the book, Wolf, is that white racism is no longer a major problem in America anymore.
It relates to Kramer in this. Kramer used the N-word repeatedly. Does that bother you?
No, that doesn't bother me. Black folks, especially racist blacks, have the freedom of expression when it comes to the issue of race and morality. But white folks are made to be quiet.
They always love having you. Appreciate it.
Black folks having babies not being married and stuff like that is out of control. And it's not because they lack material things, but because,
right.
But most of them lack more character. Look what they did to the dome. In 3 days, they turned the dome into a ghetto.
They have at the church on their website is, you know, commitment to the black community, commitment to the black family, adherence to the black work ethic. Is it racist, Jesuit?
It is absolutely racist.
Are they worshiping Christ? Are they worshiping African things black?
Barack Obama is associated with the racist church.
The white man pays Reverend Martin Luther King, subsidizes Reverend Martin Luther King, so that Reverend Martin Luther King can continue to teach the Negroes to be defenseless. That's what you mean by nonviolence. Be defenseless. Be defenseless in the face of one of the most cruel beasts that has ever taken the people into captivity. That's just the American white man. The American white man.
The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the gift of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brother. And you will know my name is the Lord, when I lay my vengeance upon thee. Upon thee.
All right, today's live stream is titled The Eagle Reset and the 2 Mile Bridge. This title came about, I had a conversation with a high school friend of mine earlier this morning, and he was telling me about a community of people that live not too far from South Beach. Now, for those who don't know, South Beach is the area down in Miami, Florida. And it's probably one of the more prominent beaches in the United States and probably a destination, an international destination of many people around the globe, you know, and whatnot. I've been there a couple of times and nice place. Now, he was telling me there's a community of people, not all of the people in the community, but some of the people in the community, they just live 2 miles away, and they're in, a lower socioeconomic community. But there are many members of that community, not all, that has never gone over to South Beach, and South Beach is a place where, you know, you can see Rolls Royces and nice restaurants, clothing shops, you know, all that type of stuff. But so he was telling me that some people have not, and it is a bridge that connects that community with South Beach. And that bridge is about a mile to no more than 2 miles long. And if you're walking, that's not a long distance at all. No, not a long distance at all if you're just walking. But many members of that community who have never walked their 2 miles from poverty to opulence. There's nobody stopping them from making that 2 mile walk. Nobody. There's no law in the books. There's no city ordinance, no state or federal law, no police, no type of law enforcement. Yet, you have people that if they would just walk across that bridge, they can step into opulence. Now, they won't be opulent from the moment they set foot in that place, but they'll be in a comfort zone where they can network and meet people that can help them get from point A to Z. However, you have many people, they won't cross that bridge because of what I would consider specters, ghosts, or preconceived notions or fears that, you know, in other words, racism. But there's no racism on that bridge. The white man's holding me back. There's no person that's going to hold you back from walking from point A to point B to cross that bridge to get from one world to another. Absolutely no visible excuse, no political excuse, no social or cultural excuse. All you need to do is just walk across the bridge and you're in a totally different world. Now, you might not be able to afford to live in that world, but you could cross that bridge and get a job. You could cross that bridge and start making friends. You could cross that bridge after you network and build some social capital. You know, find out how they who live in South Beach, find out how did they get there? What did they do or what are they doing? And that leads me to another concept that I picked up. I haven't been able to do enough research on it yet. Because somebody told me about an hour or so ago. The eagle, what I call the eagle reset, if you go on YouTube and look up the life cycle of an eagle or eagle reset, and they say the eagle has a way of expanding its life by going through a reset process. And I guess this applies to anybody. If you want to go to the next level, you're going to have to reset, just like we just had a hurricane that just passed through here. A day or so ago, Hurricane Ian. You know, reset. You know, my carport is scrap metal now. Okay. However, the house is still intact. The roof is still intact, so we're all good there. But you know, reset. So I'm looking at, all right, well, this is an opportunity for me to learn how to build carports. And those carports could be a profit center, you know, to an income producer. because you can have solar carports or carports designed where, you know, you can basically, because I've been talking about becoming totally energy independent, set up your car at solar carport. Of course, I need to move it to a different, well, until those tree branches, because there's a huge tree that starts over my neighbors in their yard. But I probably need to build two carports. And one of them will be set aside to basically convert the house into a battery-powered house. So I look at a hurricane as a time of reset. You know, whatever you have to do after one, you know, after you clean up and all that, what resets do you have to play? Some people, their reset is more than others. I was fortunate enough to, you know, have a roof over my head, but there were some people out there in that hurricane that, you know, they were in their car or under a bridge or whatever it might be. And they were going through a reset, and they might have to reset from their reset or make adjustments. But the Eagle, like I say, go on YouTube or check out any search engine, the life cycle of an Eagle or Eagle Reset. And matter of fact, if I can find something here. Eagle Reset. And that's what some people might have to do socially is hit the reset button and don't focus in on the negatives. Focus in on the positive. Okay. All right. Let's see. Eagle Reset. Let's see, life cycle. Let's see. All right, the rebirth of a year. Type that in on YouTube, the rebirth of an eagle. And let me see what I have here. Okay, it's making me... It won't let me go there. All right, they have a video, the reset of an eagle, or the rebirth of an eagle. Let me see if I can find something else for you guys. Internet's still not running 100%. All right, anyway. The story of the eagle, let's see. Here's an inspirational story of the eagle, which I find. The eagle has the longest lifespan of its species and can live up to 70 years. But to reach this age, the eagle must make a hard decision. In its 40th year, its long, flexible talons can no longer grab prey, which serves as food. Its long, sharp beak becomes bent and in his old age and heavy wings due to their thick feathers stick to its chest and make it difficult to fly. Then the eagle is left with only two options, die or go through a painful process of change which lasts 150 days. You know what? Black folks need to read this story. I'm not even through it yet. All right. The process requires that, matter of fact, all people. Not just blacks. The process requires that the eagle fly to a mountaintop and sit on its nest. The eagle knocks off its beak, against the rock until it plucks it out. Then the eagle waits for a new beak to grow back. It will pull out its talons, and then new talons grow back. The eagle starts plucking its old age feathers. After 5 months, the eagle takes its famous flight of rebirth and lives 30 more years. This story helps us to consider why change is needed. Many times, in order to survive, we need to start a change process. We sometimes need to get rid of old memories, old habits, and other past traditions, including victimhood. I added the victimhood part in. Only freed from our past burdens can we take advantage of the present. This is a wonderfully inspirational, motivational story that can be found on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. It seems a story worth sharing, but the story is not true. It is a fake story. Eagles do not live for 70 years, more like 30 years in the wild. They do not lose their beak. It will lead to certain death, and they never go through a rebirth stage. You can read more about the debunking of the story. A recent study found Let me go to another one of these. All right, life cycle of an eagle. All right, I'm reading here. Generally speaking, eagles live around 30 years in the wild. Sometimes they do live longer in captivity due to a consistent food supply, veterinarian care, and shelter from extreme weather. But 70 years is not uncommon, even quite unlikely. Okay. How many stages of life cycle of an eagle? There are four stages. Okay. What is the life cycle of a bald eagle? That's 20 to 30 years. Some eagles in captivity can live up to 50 years, so we have 50 to 70 years. Okay. Well, the rebirth of an eagle, check it out. And this is what, well, anyway, the rebirth of an eagle, and you can also read up on the bald eagle life cycle. And the 2 mile bridge. Well, I got to do my homework on this. I got to separate fact from fiction, because I'm reading conflicting stories anyway, but interesting nonetheless. All right. Other than that, we also discussed the mindset of President Obama, particularly, what was his mindset prior to getting even running for office? Because there were people, many people, including me at one time, that thought a black man could not get elected president of the United States. And not all black people thought that. But many did. But he didn't think that way. And thanks to him not thinking that way, there are people walking around on this planet of every color that you can think of that when they were born, there was a black president. So for the first 8 years of their life, all they knew was a black president, a black first lady, a black first family. There are thousands, if not, I don't know how many, let's see, how old would a person be? Let's see, Obama got elected. Let's see. Obama, 44th president of the United States. OK. history, what year, I should know the year, but I'm looking it up. I want to do some statistics here. No, come on, son. Well, somebody knows what year Obama first got elected. Because okay, here we go. All right, January 20th, 2009. All right, that was hopefully that's the first term. Okay, all right, well, it's 2022 right now. No, wait a minute. All right, 13 years, is that right? All right, so, all right, let's look up a statistic, all right. How many 13-year-olds are in the United States? How many 13-year-olds? In USA. All right, there are in the United States age 13-14, there are 279 people that are 8 years old to 14 years old. All right, out of that, 82,887 are Native Americans. So you have over 8 million people that, and you can't change this, that for the first 8 years of their life, all they knew was a black man in charge. That's their reality. So their reality and their mindset and their frequency is different than somebody, let's say, double their age, 26 years old. Depending on the environment, they wouldn't have any problem walking across that 2-mile bridge. And doing what they needed to do. To stay across that 2-mile bridge or go to any bridge or community that they want to on a global scale. But many of the barriers that people have, they're self-imposed. Yeah, I'm double-checking right now. 10-year-olds, 10 to 12-year-olds, there are 12,348,144. And this is right here in the United States. Out of that, if we have a breakdown, there are 2,217,298 white kids that are, hold it, wait a minute. Okay. They're actually, okay. When it comes to 10 to 12-year-old white kids, there are 4,400,806 white kids. All they know for the first few years of their life, a black man was in charge. $618,278 were black. 252,580 Asian kids, 10 to 12. That's all they know. There are 1,048,645 Latinos age 15. That's all they know. Well, now they know Trump, too, and Biden now. So those people, on a critical mass basis, have absolutely no problem. Because, see, the culture reset. When Obama got elected, part of the culture reset. Not everybody, but part critical masses of the culture reset. When he got elected, to many, the impossible came the possible. But then for a whole bunch of people, like I say, there's millions of them walking around the U.S. right now, 13, 14, 15 years old. To them, it's the old hat. Anybody can be a president. But Kamala Harris, okay, no big deal. Those people have no problem walking across that 2-mile bridge. But some people won't even attempt to walk across that bridge because of specters, ghosts that don't exist, the ghost of discrimination, the ghost of white supremacy. A lot of these are just in your head. Depending on who you're talking to, though. But they can, if they reset their mindset, then they can walk across that bridge. And eagles, as well as other birds and other animals, are always grooming themselves. So they're resetting themselves. Like, say, the hurricane that came through here a day or so ago, and I believe it's headed towards South Carolina now, it's resetting. And hurricanes and tropical storms and things of that nature is just nature's way of resetting parts of the planet that need to be reset. I'm one of the people that needs to be reset. That I got a small reset, because I'm looking at, all right, carport down. Okay, what opportunity exists in the carport that we got to replace? And there's a couple other resets, but I'm just saying. Anyway, that's it for my rants this morning. I'll read more about the eagle, the rebirth of the eagle, because I need to get the full story on it. But that first thing I read, boy, it sounded good until it said it wasn't true. But so jumping to the Obama thing, like I say, it on resets. My whole thing on Obama, you know what? If he can do it, but you know what? Historically, way before Obama, the Underground Railroad was a reset. Okay, a person said, all right, I'm a slave here, but if I take a chance and escape from here and go to what? Josiah Henson went to Canada. He did a reset. He didn't go along with the slave paradigm. He did a reset. And it was risky because, you know, when you escape, they're going to come looking for you. And if they come looking for you, they can maim you, harm you in some way, or even kill you. But it was a reset that many former slaves took. Some made it, some didn't. You know, either way, they were reset. You know, I've reported on here before, Frank McWhorter, born a slave. You can look him up as Free Frank McWhorter, born a slave, and he did a reset to buy his freedom. While others around him were still legally enslaved, he worked, earned a paycheck, got paid, bought his contract out from his master, then went from Missouri to Illinois, bought like 40 acres or 80 acres of land, probably 80 acres of land, and he started his own town, which was, look up New Philadelphia, Illinois. Look that up. And he became the mayor of a town. He reset himself three times. Let's just look at the inventory here. First thing, he reset himself to get himself, he manumitted himself. Reset number one. Reset number two, he went from, and you know what? This coincides, in my opinion, of he left Egypt. He left Egypt, which for him was Missouri, where he was a slave, and he went to his promised land, which was Illinois. He, too, had to cross the river. It wasn't the Red Sea, but it was the Mississippi River. So reset, he went to a new land. He bought land, about, I guess, 80 acres. Third reset. And then he developed it, and he became mayor of, I mean, this man went at least four visible resets in his life. And he also helped other people reset their life. So if Frank McWhorter, Mother Priscilla Baltimore, Montgomery, who started, Mount Bayou, Mississippi, Laura Douglas and her husband, who started, founded the town of Highland Beach, Maryland, Paul Cuffey, back during colonial times, black shipbuilder, he helped establish the nation that we call today Sierra Leone. All right. So these are not isolated or outlier examples. These are examples of black folk who hit the reset. Some of them did it individually. Sometimes we're forced to take a reset. We're forced to walk across that bridge. You know, some do it at their leisure. Some are forced to take a reset. It's either, if I stay here, I'm going to die on that mate, or reset by walking across that bridge and getting past all those specters, those ghosts, those fears, getting past all that. Now, and just look at it this way. Because just like a game of, you know, a sports athletic contest, basketball, football, baseball, there's offense and defense. So let me put this in basketball analogy or football analogy. So when you're walking across that bridge, you know what? You might have to have the offensive skills to keep on going so you can overcome the defense. The defense might be racism. The defense might be discrimination. The defense might be Jim Crow. All of those are defenses. But what's your offense? Now, if you don't have no offense, you can't get nowhere. Okay? when you're playing chess. Okay, there are a number. Look it up online. There are a number of defenses in the game of chess. But what's your offense or offenses against the various defenses? Okay, let's say racism is real. Let's say discrimination is real. Let's say, I mean, all kind of things to hold somebody down or back are real. But once again, think in terms of basketball, football, baseball, soccer, the game of chess. What's your offense? You know, what's your game? If you come across a particular, like, for instance, slavery. Slavery was a defense. Okay. Now, escaping via the Underground Railroad was an offense. Harriet Tubman became proficient at playing offense because she knew the defense as well, and she never got caught up. And there are other people like her. There are many stories like hers. So you can walk across that 2-mile bridge. Because Obama, I'm sure, before he even ran for president, he was looking at the possible defenses like playing the race card. Somebody was going to try to play the race card against him. Which Hillary Clinton attempted to do. But he was prepared for it. He didn't get caught up with it. So you had, look, the offense and defense is just like night and day. Okay. So you got to know how to play offense. You have to know how to play defense. So if you have that mindset, all right, discrimination, recognize it for what it is. It is that particular person's or organization's, that's their, defensive mechanism. Okay. So there are ways to go, you know, what offensive plays do you have in mind to get past that and keep on going to your goal? It's just like the people that need to cross that 2-mile bridge to get to South Beach by walking. All right. It's if you have weak thoughts or don't know how to play offense. Now, in this case, it's a straight shot. Just walk across the bridge. It's really as simple as that. But in any event, if you can think of a defense, think about 5 to 10 ways offensively where you can get around that defense. You'll be okay. All right, let's see. Okay, open mic, open anything you guys want to talk about. Well, I did read something this morning. I want to read it to you guys. It's an affirmation. Says, I'm superior to my negative thoughts and low actions. My thoughts do attract my desired outcome. My mind is incredibly powerful, and I easily change negative thought loops into positive self-talk. All right, let's see. Now I need to find my way back to the studio. Let's see. And actually open mic for whatever you guys want to talk about. My internet hasn't been running as fast. It runs fast during certain times of the day. But since the hurricane, anyway, so bear with me as I I'm waiting for it. It's moving like real slow when I try to get back to Blog Talk. Let's see. I know one topic I like to discuss will be church camps, because that was mentioned about a month or so ago, and okay, wait a minute. All right.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to
so you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to
so you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy.
Yeah, that's right. She breaks the mold of what we think of as what girls are interested in versus what guys are interested in. She's an individual.
Welding, grinding, cutting, sanding. I'd much rather wear grease than makeup.
Her mind just works like an engineer. She wants to know why.
The project kind of took on a life of its own. Now there's literally thousands of people watching to see what she succeeds at next.
My name is Catherine DeMaria. I'm 14 years old, and I'm rebuilding a Pontiac Fiero.
All right, what are you working on today?
We're going to do welding first.
Welding first. Okay.
My car that I'm building is a Fiero 86 GT. It is going to be all black and yellow interior. And then the body is going to be gloss black with yellow racing stripes. My car is going to be fast and sporty and just cool.
Michigan has a great car culture, home of the Motor City. It's a great place to be to work on a car.
I'm going to be welding in the back of my frame rail right now. I'm going to do 1-inch stitches, so I'll have like an inch, no weld, and then an inch here. I got the idea to build my car the summer before I turned 12. I've been to one or two car shows with my dad before, and so that's where the idea sparked, hey, maybe I could rebuild a car.
She said, I want to redo a car so that it's done for my 16th birthday. And it's like, okay.
I just knew that it wouldn't work unless I had good reasons. So I'm like, well, if I build a car, then I'd get the experience. I'd be able to possibly look into future careers.
She's like, I'm going to pay for it myself. It'll be a car that only has two seats, so I won't have a lot of friends to get in trouble with. So we decided, okay, we'll let her try it.
Fiero, a brilliant example of Pontiac innovation in action. Fiero, only from Pontiac.
I picked the Pontiac Fiero because it's pretty much all curves. There's like no straight edges on it whatsoever, and it's little, so I figured it would be easier to build than like rebuilding a huge semi-truck or something. And the amount that I personally spent on my car has probably been over $2,000 from babysitting and selling my welding art online.
She's put probably close to 1,000 hours of work, or maybe even more than that by this point.
All my friends are like, you should be putting on makeup, you should be prancing around with us all. And I'm like, I can't, I gotta work on my car. They're like, your car can wait. And I'm like, no, you can wait. It's like in Twilight, Bella has this really old truck, and everybody teases her about it, but she loves it. Same principle.
One of the reasons why she's been able to keep her interest in this project is the fact that she continues to learn. And to learn new skills.
What I'm holding in my hands right now is my camshaft. It moves the lifters, which moves the push rod, which moves the rockers, which pushes down on the springs, which moves the valves. So far, the skills I've learned on this car is welding, grinding, cutting, sanding. I learned how to upholster things, how to change tires, how to change my fluids, how to take apart an engine. I look at different textbooks and things. Then I ask my dad and my uncle, what do you know about this? My goal for finishing the car is to have it done on my 16th birthday because it's kind of like you're 16, now you're free. Right now, I am about halfway through in both time and in progress, so I think it can happen.
Anything you gotta fill, you gotta sand more.
What?
Sanding is the thing she hates far and away. Everything else she gets excited to do.
Somebody at some point took a rattle can and pretty much spray painted it black. So I have to sand all the way through all those layers and then repaint it.
The big trick is to keep that thing moving. Don't let it sit in one place ever.
Especially with black.
Yeah. Sanding is kind of like having to do laundry every day. It's just repetitive and there's not really much of a point to it other than it needs done.
I think that's taught her stick-to-itiveness and commitment, and then finally you see the end result.
The motivation for me is just being able to visualize what I want in the end. Otherwise, you're just staring at the details. You need to be able to see the whole picture as well. I think the bolt's turning with it, Daddy.
Yep, it is.
It's a lot of fun working with my dad because we know how to joke but still get the work done.
We've created a rapport that we can talk about anything. I mean, there's things that she shared with me that I think there's no way I would have ever told my parents that. We've talked about money. We've talked about how to plan for college. We've talked about boys and sex. And it's just a safe space for her and I to just kind of grow and learn and build together.
Oh, that's an awesome weld. You should come see it.
Yeah, that looks nice, kid.
I like that weld.
Good. One of the things that's probably surprised us the most is how many people have taken an interest in her story and how quickly it spread throughout the internet. And it really kind of probably started off of her forum. People started responding back. You know, I've got to spare this. Could I send it to her? Then pretty soon we had a pile of things that had been shipped to her for her project. And they came from Canada, from all over the U.S., from Australia. From there, the project kind of took on a life of its own. AutoBuild, they're the largest automotive magazine on the planet, named Catherine AutoBuild's 2012 Woman of the Year.
All the support has been really encouraging because it just shows that I am making a difference and I can do this. And so when I'm stuck on something, then I'm like, I'm not alone. I've got people out there who will help.
She knows that there's literally thousands of people watching to see what she succeeds at next. And so I think there's some of that in the back of her mind that I can't let these people down now.
I think people have been so enthusiastic because it's not necessarily something you see every day, because my age sets me apart from most people who work on them, and also the fact that I'm a girl working in what would be considered guys' fields. As much as that kind of annoys me, really, it's just annoying that people are always asking me, so what's it like to be a girl doing this? It doesn't really matter that I'm a girl doing this. I mean, I'm able to do it just as well as any other person.
Got it.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that there are enough women working in the engineering field because they think, oh, it's guys' world. But I hear these stories about women who are in it, and they've brought so much to it.
Hi, Catherine. Michelle Pickering. Great to meet you.
You too.
What do you want to see at the auto show, Catherine? You can see the rest of Chevrolet. You can see the Camaro.
Let's do the Camaro.
Okay.
I want to talk with them about their role mostly. I want to see how much women can actually bring to the automotive world.
You see that neat stuff feature
yeah.
that we put into the bumper.
Cool.
Did you put that in?
We put that in
there. You guys need to go over there and then we'll get a picture of the two of you by the bumper.
Oh, there's a handle. Look at this. There's a handle.
At 14, I never would have accomplished half as much.
How old are you?
14.
Wow.
Catherine just is so impressive in terms of her knowledge and her way she handles herself.
Her mind just works like an engineer. She wants to know why.
I'm just trying to figure out this timing chain thing. What's going on here?
I want to see how challenging it is or how different it is for women.
When I first came in, many times I was viewed as being a secretary. Today that's different. There are many opportunities for women, although we still don't have an equal number of women in the engineering fields as we do males.
My concern is that as a society, we may not be encouraging women to go into science, technology, engineering, or math even. But Catherine seems to have figured it out all by herself.
We want to keep contact with you and make sure that, you know, you progress the way you are.
I look forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Clearly, it's going to be an exciting day when she gets to drive the car out of the garage. But I think she's going to be looking for what's next. Because I think for her and for me, it's been that whole learning process that's been most important.
This car project has definitely changed my outlook on what I want to do. I've really become interested in being a mechanical engineer. After high school, I'd really like to go to a big engineering school. There's been a few places who have contacted me, and it's been kind of cool to see them reaching out already. It's important to me to be a role model in this project because I want to be there to say, hey, look, girls really can do this. You shouldn't put them down if they want to try. Just give them the chance. I think that people should have the chance to chase after their dreams and help them come true.
La da 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 da. I don't know what else to say, so I'm just gonna hum, make random noises. Good with you? Okay, good with me.
Fiero, only from.
Shit, I almost fell. I'm going to explain this to you really quickly, and then I'll kind of show you what I did. But when I make a tiny house, So this is, I'm going to call this a tiny house shell, right? So right now, my current plan is a solar shed. I have several hundred watts of solar that I intend to put on a roof. I think I have a charge controller. I think I have a 30 amp MPPT, so I'll probably do about, I have six extra 310 watt panels, so I'll probably put two of those on the roof, and then I have a 5,000 watt hour battery bank, and then a 1,500 watt pure sine wave inverter. So right now, my plan is to make this a solar shed. The goal of this project was to do a see if I could get this done under $500, which I'm currently doing. I'm in under my $500 budget, so that I'm pretty excited about. And I will explain how I was able to do that in another video, because it does require a little bit of effort to, you know, source things, get deals, and so on. But so I kind of do a tiny house shell, and then I use it as a shed, and then if I want to convert it to a tiny house, I can. So for example, I have 16-inch centers. I probably, if I were to do it over again, would do 24s and 2x6s, just to heighten the R value. I experimented with 1-inch, I think this is XPS, rigid foam board as sheathing. I do like this. I currently have the radiant barrier facing in. Just because of the way I sided it, I used the H panel, so it's pretty flat to it on the outside. There's no room for a gap, so I did it this way. I did it that way intentionally. The roof I may do differently. I have 8-foot walls on this side. I have a 10-foot wall on this side. It's actually about 10'4.5" with everything. I am doing a salt box roof, so this is some experimenting. I also have I'm going to have a loft on this end, so this is 8x12, and I will come in, because I already have all the supplies. I already have all the foam board and the siding and the lumber and everything that I need, so I'll show you a little bit of it just to give you a touch of what I'm doing. Let's turn this around. So let's see. So I'm gonna come out one more here, and I am going to make this a 4-foot sort of lofted area. Now let me scoot these. Okay, so I have a ridge beam there. That ridge beam is up 3 feet above the double top plate. You can see there I did sort of a salt box roof, so 3-foot rise. I go over 3 feet this way, 5 feet this way for the 8 feet. So it is a bit of a salt box roof. Got the doorway framed out here. Let's see what else. I mean, that's about it. I could have, if I was just doing a shed, I'm gonna also, like along here, I'm gonna put a little bit of storage. While I use it for a shed, I'm gonna keep storage. I'm just gonna do storage up there, and then I could loft it later. I like the salt box style, because if I did decide to convert these into like two little bedrooms or sleeping areas or something like that, you have a lot more headroom on this side where you need it. So there'd be a lot of headroom there, and then that beam's gonna come down to here, so much less there, or the rafters are gonna come down. So that is sort of where I'm at on this project. I currently have about 2 hours into the floor. I did 3 walls in 3 hours, so that's 5. I did the long wall with the door in 1.5 hours, and then I have about another 1.5 hours in the siding. So I'm probably into this right now about 12 hours. I also got... And I'll show you, this is kind of part of my getting deals on stuff. So these are all 1x's. You can see they're a little bent, but I do have, you know, my planer and stuff like that, so I can plane these down. But for the, basically what that was for the roof, I am going to do my joists. And then I'm actually going to put the rigid foam board down on top of that. I'm going to screw these 3/4 thick purlins into the rigid foam board. with the radiant barrier facing up, and then I'm going to put my roofing on top of that, and then it's capped, so any of the heat will be able to rise and kind of get out of there, and I'll have the 3/4 inch space required for the radiant barrier. Another thing, I'm in Arizona, so I see a lot of people make a lot of mistakes, one of them being they'll put the vapor barrier on the outside in Arizona. Now, remember, the vapor barrier is always supposed to go on the cooler side, and in Arizona, that's usually the interior. So that is some food for thought when you see people wrapping the outside versus the inside in Arizona. But this is, again, just kind of an experimental design where I wanted to mess with this. Part of me getting deals, I got 40 of these purlins, which aren't straight, fine for my purpose. They're 4 inches thick anyway, so going to be easy to hit even if there is a little bit of bow. And I could straighten them out if need be with my planer or my table saw. But they had them at Lowe's for, I think it was supposed to be like $180, and then they had them marked down in their coal lumber to like $90, to like $100, and then I talked to the manager and he gave them to me for $40. So I got 40 of them. I got them for $1 a piece. It's kind of how I end up finding deals on stuff. I also bought some gift cards at a pretty decent discount to get my lumber and to get all of my sheathing. So, for example, I got 15 pieces of sheathing for, I think, about $60 for 1-inch rigid foam by the time everything was done. So that'll give me an R value of 4 in the wall straight out the gate. And then if I wanted to do a tiny house, I always have the option of just buying a rigid foam board when I get a deal on it, insulating one wall at a time. And that would be an option too if I wanted to super, you know, insulate it as a tiny house and be able to run it off a smaller AC unit. I will do another video on this. I don't tend to update my builds. I don't document my builds. I'm kind of a vlog channel anyway, and I build a lot of stuff, but I don't make plans for anything. I kind of do it off the cuff, the top of my head, and it's really hard for me to document and do as I go, so I probably will just do updates like this, and I'll give you a tour as I go. I will show you the...
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, if you just do it 10 more times.